morning. I have had a couple surprises already today, and I'll tell you about them as I go along. But I am here to introduce you to a research funding organization located in Washington that I think was created in many ways because it was appreciated that the research that is primarily funded by industry sponsors, by the NIH, and by other sponsors, has purposes other than answering the very practical questions that patients and their clinicians face. As Dr. Rosenzweig said earlier, oftentimes it's driven by researchers, dedicated individuals who have a personal curiosity that is essential to understanding how diseases work, how they happen, the mechanisms underlying them. Others have as a primary mission in research developing products or positioning products so that they reach people and are used. But those two sources of research, despite the fact that more than $100 billion a year is used in those kinds of research activities, leave patients and their clinicians with many questions. And I'm going to sort of lay out for you the kind of research that we aim to fund. And the most important item about the Institute and about the research we fund is that for some political reasons, really, and ironically, it was named the Patient-Centered Outcomes Research Institute. It might have been called the Comparative Effectiveness Research Institute, but that was a politically naughty word in 2008 and 2009. So Congress came up with another name, and it has made all the difference. So people, I've been there now for just about 4 years, and people ask me often, what was your biggest surprise? When you left California and you came here to start PCORI, what was your biggest surprise? And my biggest surprise, I always say, was that the patients were so ready to jump into research and to be part of this. They were way ahead of the people who thought of the name, way ahead of people like me who were just thinking about comparative effectiveness research. And now I've got to say today, the surprise today is that I just ran into an organization who's been here for 35 years and who's been patient-centered and patient-powered for 35 years. I just learned when I got here this morning that the audience is about 90% patients and their family members. So I changed my slides quite a bit, but just to say that your organization has knocked my socks off already. I was very glad I was here for the first two sessions, and I can't wait to for the session, Can I Really Ask That Question? I really can't wait for that. And I'll just say to you, listen carefully. The doctors who are answering the questions, the patients who are asking them, you may find some of the practical questions asked in that session that could turn into the kind of research we like to fund. So we were created as part of the still-standing Affordable Care Act. And the board is a 21-person not-for-profit board appointed by the Government Accountability Office. They first met in November of 2010, so that's a little less than 5 years ago. We fund a kind of research I'm going to explain to you called comparative clinical effectiveness research. And we engage patients and the other stakeholders, clinicians, caregivers, payers, delivery systems, researchers, in all of those stakeholders who fit into the research process. We engage them in identifying the research that needs to be funded and in conducting it. And we look for answers to real-world, practical questions. So this is the mandate in the legislation, that we are supposed to assist patients, clinicians, purchasers, and policymakers in making informed healthcare decisions. And we are supposed to do this through conducting research and then synthesizing the evidence from that research. So that's what we were told to do. Again, it recognizes the fact that a lot of evidence just doesn't quite get at the practical questions patients and clinicians need the answers to. So there's, for example, there's two brand new antibiotics to treat a fungal infection. Each of them has some benefits and each of them has some adverse effects. How do we know which one works better for which kinds of patients. That is never done pre-approval. The assessing the benefits and the possible adverse consequences of treatments in different types of patients is a kind of research that PCORI would be very proud to fund. We have a mission that simply says that we do that we help people make informed health care decisions, and we help improve care delivery and patient outcomes by producing and promoting research that comes from research guided by patients, caregivers, and the broader healthcare community. So unlike the scientist who's driven by his or her basic curiosity, we live for the questions of the stakeholders. That's why we were put into existence. So what is comparative effectiveness research? Well, it is the kind of research that generates and synthesizes evidence that compares the benefits and harms of different methods to prevent, diagnose, and treat a clinical condition. Dr. Rosenzweig told us about Dr. Buckley's work with stem cell transplants, where she discovered that using intensive chemotherapy actually led to poorer patient outcomes than not in the case of stem cell transplant. And later he talked about a study that was testing a milder dosage of chemotherapy in some instances. That's the kind of practical comparative research that we aim to fund. We compare at least two approaches, often more than two approaches. We want to inform a specific clinical or patient or policy decision. And very importantly, we pay attention to a much broader range of outcomes. We're interested in survival, because patients are interested in survival, obviously. We're interested in symptom-free survival, event-free survival. But we are also interested in symptoms. We are interested in ability to function, ability to go to school, ability to work, that wider range of outcomes that actually matter to patients. We always insist that our research be conducted in real-world populations so that it generalizes to real-world situations and people. And very importantly, we look at how results might differ in patient subgroups. Dr. Rosenzweig, again, talked about personalized medicine. It's now sometimes being called precision medicine, but it's simply that patients are not all alike. The same treatment does not work the same for every patient. Some people may really want to consider a transplant. Other people may not need it. Some people are worried about the adverse effects of a particular drug and would therefore prefer another one. All of that is, and some people have different genetic factors than others. So a lot of times we think of personalized or precision medicine as just how we bring genetic information to decision making, but there's a lot more, including patient characteristics, their other conditions, and their preferences that goes into getting the right treatment to the right patient. And who are our stakeholders? We consider that everybody who has any kind of a hand in decision making in healthcare, whether it's the patient or their caregiver, the clinician, the payer, the delivery system, the training institution that trains clinicians, industry, policymakers, they are all stakeholders, and we work hard to keep them all at the table. We don't want to fund research that's used as a weapon against another group of stakeholders. We want to fund research that works for patients and brings the stakeholders together. We involve patients and we involve those other stakeholders from the very, very beginning, from identifying the topic that needs to be researched, and then from a number of topics, prioritize the ones that could make the most difference and help us decide exactly which ones to fund. So we have advisory panels filled with patients and stakeholders, and at the end I'm going to show you how you could join us, contact us, and join us on one of these panels or review committees. When we review applications for funding, when we review those applications, there are patients in the room, there are clinicians in the room, nurses, physicians, there are other stakeholders like insurers, industry representatives, as well as the scientists who are evaluating which is the best proposal. And all those scientists who get funding from us must have patients and other stakeholders or patient organizations involved with them. So they must be engaged throughout. And why do we do that? We do it precisely because we think that there's a better chance that if you've engaged with the people who need the information, you'll get the research question right. You'll do the studies right. You'll interpret the data right. And you'll have a group of people ready to work with you to get the information out. You hear the story about research sitting on the shelf for 17 years. PCORI can't afford for that to be the case. This is the kind of definitive end-of-the-line research that ought to get out immediately. And if you've got patients and clinicians who believe the results, the chances are much better that it will. Okay. I'm not really going to say a lot about our research except this. We fund research in five basic priority areas. The first one is called assessing prevention, diagnosis, and treatment options. So which of two treatments, which of two prevention strategies would work better for me, given my age, the other conditions I might have, my preferences? Stem cell transplant versus various medications? Is it one antibiotic versus another? Is it in other conditions, is it a surgical approach or a medical approach? So all of those kinds of questions that patients face day in and day out, we aim to fund that kind of research. Improving health systems just says that a lot of our care is coordinated or delivered by healthcare delivery systems, which themselves often are not all that coordinated. And this is research on how systems can do a better job of taking care of populations of people. Communication and dissemination research is precisely how do we communicate and get this information, this evidence about which works better, out to patients and clinicians. Addressing disparities faces the fact that in this country there are patient populations who, for a variety of reasons, many related to income and socioeconomic status, don't have the same access or aren't able to take advantage of the services that are there. How do we resolve and eliminate those disparities? And the last one I'll talk about a bit more in a minute. How do we build an infrastructure and methods so we can do this research quicker, in more answering more and more questions? I'm not going to say a lot about funding except that we give out a lot of money. We give out between $300 and $400 million a year. That's more than just about any agency except for the NIH and industry. So it's a lot of funding, and it is available to address a very wide range of questions. One of the things we're aiming to do is get patients into the driver's seat many times. Patients may have questions. Patients can go and approach researchers and become not only a member of the research team, but a driver of the research team. We have funding awards, and look on here for our engagement awards, that actually give out funding to bring patients, clinicians, and researchers together. Smallish awards, but I don't mean really small, I mean $100,000, $150,000, to get a team together to begin developing a research agenda. We're going to talk about PI Connect a bit in a minute, and then Dr. Kate Sullivan is going to talk about it in depth, but that is a fabulous way to get research underway for important questions that patients with primary immunodeficiencies face. I'm just going to skip that one. We have funded a lot of research in areas like transitions in care, so from the hospital to the home, community health workers, the role of community health workers, of health coaching, of collaborative care, specialists in primary care, of palliative end-of-life care, of patient navigators to help patients get through complex systems, of how to self-manage disease, shared decision-making, making those decisions based on the available evidence, and telehealth and telemedicine for bringing good clinical care to patients that don't have ready access. Okay, I want to say a few words now about PCORnet. Marcia was talking about EPHR and about I'm really impressed. Your organization has one of the most amazing personal health records that I've seen. And I want you to just think for a minute about what happens if 1,000 of those personal health records are put together in a secure environment, so the data are safe. What do you have? You have a database, a remarkable database for a set of rare, very rare conditions. You've got a remarkable database in which research can be begun. So, the notion that the electronic health record, personal health records are now pretty widespread in the U.S. led PCORI and its Board of Governors to invest a very large amount of money in an idea called PCORnet. PCORnet was not brand new There have been previous efforts to do something similar with computerized data, but PCORnet was really the first one that went after, primarily, to start with, electronic health record data. We funded 11 clinical data research networks, and each network had electronic health record data on at least a million people, many of them, many more than a million, so that altogether now that we count about 70 million persons in these clinical data research networks. These are based in healthcare delivery systems. The Academic Medical Centers of New York City. The state of Louisiana is a CDRN. Five academic centers in the Midwest, Kaiser Permanente across the country, are four of the CDRNs. And they are working to put their data into a common format. The data doesn't leave Kaiser Permanente or New York City. The data stays there, but it's put into a common format so that we can do research on, if we need it, 50 million people, or the people with a particular disease, maybe a rare disease, in that 50 million. Very importantly for today's conversation, we funded 18 patient-powered networks, and this is, no other network has ever done this. Patient-powered networks like PI Connect are groups of patients partnered with researchers who have a single condition or single cluster of conditions like primary immunodeficiencies. And these are patients who are very interested in participating in research. So in addition to primary immunodeficiencies, we have patients with rheumatoid arthritis, patients with depression, patients with rare epilepsies, patients with rare autism, just to name a few. And the charge of these networks is essentially to grow and to obtain data for their patients and to be ready to participate in research. And we have a coordinating center that coordinates and supports all of these networks. So this is the goal of PCORnet, that we improve the nation's capacity to conduct clinical research more efficiently. Research often costs too much because it takes so much effort to find patients and get them involved. We aim to activate the patients so that they're part of the decision-making about the research that gets done, and to have data on very large numbers so that the research can be done more affordably, more efficiently, more questions can be asked and answered. We aim to do both randomized trials and very large big data observational studies, and to support the idea that the U.S. could become a learning healthcare system. We don't learn from most of the care we deliver these days, and we aim to change that. As I said, we're going to fund both clinic randomized trials and observational studies. They will be, most of them, multi-center studies, so more than one of the networks will be involved, but they will share infrastructure, policies, and procedures to be more efficient. They will be more comparable with each other and with the outside world because they'll use standard definitions and approaches. And we think that over time, with the involvement and leadership of patients inside all these networks, and consultation among patients, clinicians, delivery systems, payers, purchasers, industry, the types of questions that get asked will change, and they will become more patient-centered, more relevant, and that will enhance the interest in research. We expect PPRNs, which now don't have much overlap, they've got some overlap with one or more CDRNs, but not necessarily, to grow right into our CDRNs, from organized patient groups growing right into our very large delivery system populations, so that they can influence the kind of research that gets done. So, in closing, we think that the patient-powered research networks are going to grow into larger, more representative organizations of people with these specified illnesses, that patient-powered research networks are going to become very attractive sites for research on that condition, including clinical trials, that through the PPRNs, patients are going to have opportunities to sit down with payers, delivery systems, and funders to help shape the research agenda, identify the questions, and identify those worthy of support, and that they will make both research and ultimately clinical care more patient-centered. So, does all this engagement make a difference? A recent paper that summarized 66 studies found that, in fact, patient and public involvement in research improve the quality of the research and the appropriateness or relevance of research. They change the research questions. They change the data collection. They change the study populations, and they changed interpretation of results. All stages of research, having patients and their clinicians and caregivers in the room changed the way research was done. But there's still a lot. We've still got a lot to prove, and PCORI is working hard at doing the research that proves that engaging you, engaging patients and caregivers, does make research better. It comes pretty naturally once you get started. Researchers report that they love it. We think that we have been very lucky with the name we were given and have encountered a kind of research and encountered the patient communities that can actually make a difference, make research better, complement the more basic kinds of research that have been going on for a very long time. So the last thing I want to say is please go to our website and look for funding opportunities, including both the actual research and also the engagement awards that you can consider for bringing groups of patients and clinicians together. And please get involved with us. Okay. Get involved. There we go. Please get involved. Look to us and consider joining our review panels that review study applications. Consider applying to be on one of our advisory panels. We succeed if you're with us. So, again, it's a real pleasure to be here, and I really look forward to hearing more about PI Connect from Dr. Sullivan. Thank you.